Father of Storms. Written by Dean Jones. Produced by Be Here. Episode 2.
Be Here. Bringing books to life. Vision without sight.
Chapter 3. Finally. Corey watched from the room beside the cell. A smile appeared on his lips as the agents questioned his prey. It had been a long time since he had seen the man now lying on a bed in his office building. The man hadn't changed in all the years since he had seen him last. His blonde hair remained neatly tied back, framing his chiseled face. Corey didn't generally feel envy towards anyone, but Seth had the type of face that would send many into a weak-kneed quiver in his presence. He could see the blue eyes flaring as Seth became irritated by his questioners. As Corey watched, a small, professionally dressed woman entered the room behind him.
"Sir, forgive my interruption, but there's been a call for you."
The woman spoke confidently, with an assured authority that others in his organization would not have in his presence.
"Who was it, Sarah?"
he asked.
"It was that reporter. She insisted I let you know everything went to plan."
"Excellent. Please be so kind as to transfer some additional funds to her account. I also wish to keep her available in case I need her to support our efforts in finding the wife and daughter,"
he asked, not taking his attention from the events in the other room.
"How much shall I send her?"
Sarah asked.
"Oh, 50,000 should be enough to keep her satisfied. If you could also send our friends in Fleet Street a message to keep her engaged by printing whatever drivel she sends them. Also, if you could find the number for the head of Sky News, I think it is about time they let our little mistress of disinformation loose on their channel."
Sarah made notes on her pad.
"Anything else, sir?"
"I don't believe so, unless you can think of anything."
Sarah looked at her pad.
"Well, I expect you will want to contact the American president and other world leaders. I've noted that there is increasing unrest relating to the Middle East situation. I get the feeling that their desire to continue is waning. Also, I have ensured a total media blackout regarding the event in central London. It wasn't easy, as many outlets had footage from mobile phones. I had IT sweep social media and streaming sites to find all references and then delete them. The story I've given them to run relates to the strange weather event, which only lasted a short while. I've hired 5 meteorologists who will confirm that flash thunderstorms are commonplace and attribute them to climate change. This should allow us to comfortably manage the upcoming summit, where we can make further decisions about how we move forwards towards phase 6 of the Global Climate Agreement."
She turned the page.
"That's all I have at the moment."
"Very good. Please set up the calls. I have good news to share with them regarding my latest capture. Oh, can you inform our American friends here that they should immediately begin looking for our guest's wife and daughter? I feel that time is of the essence, and although I believe in our methods, I doubt they alone will be enough to achieve my goal."
He turned to watch as the diminutive redhead left with a nod of understanding. Moments passed as Seth underwent some persuasive techniques that he knew would only amount to slight irritation to the man. Then the situation became slightly more captivating as the sound of Agent Harvey's arm snapping ran through the speaker on the console in front of him.
"Now, that looks painful,"
he sniggered as the room became significantly tenser, with the Americans considering, as is their usual response, to remove the holstered weapons and shoot the man in front of them. There will be no killing of this man, he thought. In his mind, he projected that point towards those inside the room, thus diffusing the situation as Dr. Garrett entered the fray.
"Garrett,"
he mused as the doctor spoke with Seth. What a huge man he was, the perfect leader, yet pathetically emotional towards his son. The memory flooded his mind as he remembered the first meeting with Seth's father. "Perhaps I will remind Seth of this next time we speak," he thought as his quarry descended into unconsciousness. He wasn't the cleverest of men, and he may never put two and two together. Shame to miss the moment of recognition, but perhaps it's for the best. With that, he left the room to return to his office. He had things to do, and from the scene he had watched, a certain person needed some of his particular form of persuasion to get them back onto the same page as the rest of the imbeciles currently occupying this building. Chapter 4. Where is he? Marcy dragged Hope from the floor and frantically searched for Seth. In the melee of screaming people, running this way and trying to avoid whatever it was that had caused the explosion, she couldn't see where he had gone. He had been stood in front of them as he faced off with those fanatics, but where was he now? As the area began to clear, she moved behind a nearby building with Hope in tow to try to get a view of the scene and see if Seth was anywhere close by. Marcy stood behind a pillar that hid them from the people searching the area. From their vantage point, she could see a perfect circle of destruction, the epicenter of which now contained a crater the size of a beach ball. There was a smell of burnt meat floating in the air and the blackened remains of those scattered within the zone. Looking at the remnants of those who had found them, she suddenly had a thought. Quickly, she turned to check on Hope, who was standing behind her, for any sign of injury. To her relief, her daughter didn't have a mark on her and still looked pristine in her new outfit.
"Are you okay?"
she asked. Hope nodded as her eyes began to fill. Marcy felt torn between caring for her daughter and locating her husband. For a moment, she watched as Hope stood motionless, unsure of what to do. The events of the past few moments had sent her head spinning. She could still hear the ringing of the explosion in her ears, and yet she knew she was unharmed. Marcy followed her daughter's gaze, knowing she would likely be focused on what lay before her. Marcy grabbed hold of her daughter as she started to balk, she presumed from the smell. Marcy had never seen anything like this, except in movies. To see it in real life was an experience she had never expected or thought about. Her mind raced with a million thoughts as she tried to find the reason for what had happened. Everything was a blur in Marcy's mind. She could see the people moving around with police cars appearing from out of the adjoining streets. Around them, a crowd had gathered, drawn by the sounds of sirens, or more likely the boom of the explosion. Hope noted many had taken out their phones and were filming the scene. Some were visibly shaken and cried at the horror of what they witnessed. Several minutes passed. A cordon had been erected along with some screens around the piles of corpses, which had been moved while the men searched for something. Knowing what needed to be done, Marcy placed a hand on her daughter's head.
"Wait here a second, sweetheart,"
she said.
"I'm just going to look for your dad."
She crept among the crowd as several official-looking men picked through prone bodies on the ground, each one a life lost in the madness created to hunt down her husband. Some bodies were unrecognisable as people, with only their shape to distinguish them from the charred pavement slabs thrown from the ground and now mingled with the dead. She knew that one of the bodies being turned would be Brian, the leader of the group who had been hounding them for 12 months. She hadn't witnessed what had happened to him, but as he was closest to Seth when he attacked, she was certain he was now lying among the dead. With that knowledge, she felt glad. This feeling instantly made her guilty, but she couldn't escape it. She was glad he was dead, and now they had a chance of a normal life without being persecuted by people like him. All she needed now was to find Seth so they could leave. Then, out of the corner of her eye, Marcy saw movement. She turned her head to glimpse an arm raised from the ground. Someone was still alive.
"Hope, stay here," Don't be seen,
she instructed as she steeled herself to venture further forward to get a better view of this arm, along with the person attached to it. She knew it was Seth, even before she saw his face. The relief when she saw it was him was immense. Just as she prepared to run to his side to help him get up, there was a cry from her left.
Over here, quickly! I think that's him there!
There was a stamping of feet as several men rushed to where he was. Marcy knew she couldn't reach him. As two of the men lifted him from the ground by his arms, a third, to Marcy's horror, punched him in the stomach. She froze, staring in shock at the two men who, until now, she had guessed were there to help. She had convinced herself as she watched that they were some kind of police or agency of the government here to make sense of what had occurred. She could now clearly see it was Seth they were searching for. Marcy froze as the dead bodies were unceremoniously thrown into the back of trucks as people in white coveralls cleaned the area of debris. There was no attempt at an investigation, as she would have expected. The police were being confined to crowd control as the official-looking men in black suits went about their business. It was clear that their only intention was to find Seth as they were making their way back to their cars. The sound of a siren caught her attention. She looked up to see a black van hurtling towards them. She glanced back towards where she'd spotted Seth moments ago. He was now standing unsteadily between two men. Marcy knew she was in danger too, but couldn't stop herself as she called out to her husband.
Seth, it will be okay. Stay strong.
Several sets of eyes turned in her direction, including the two men carrying her husband. Seth made eye contact. She was sure he recognised her before a third man tasered him, then bundled him into the now waiting van. Knowing she was exposed and not feeling like these people would be sympathetic to the wife of the man they had just taken, she turned quickly and rushed back to Hope, grabbing her hand as she stopped in front of her.
Quickly, they've taken your dad. We have to move.
Hope stared at her mother, then let herself be dragged from the scene. She stumbled a few steps before her mind began to clear. Suddenly, she was aware of the urgency in her mother's actions and understood what was needed. She began to sprint as fast as her legs could carry her alongside her mother out into the street into the London crowds. Behind them, they could hear shouts of,
"Find them!"
and,
"Down here!"
But she knew that in the crowd of people still milling about, confused and searching for answers about what just had happened, they could disappear. They were moving quickly, but had stopped running to avoid attracting attention. It had been around 10 minutes since they had set off. Marcy had zigzagged through the streets towards Paddington, finally satisfied she wasn't being followed. She came back on herself then, moved down Sussex Gardens into a hotel where she booked a room for the rest of the week. The friendly receptionist offered them a drink as they waited for their key.
"You look like you've just run the marathon,"
she said in her Eastern European accent.
"We've been rushing, searching for hotels,"
Marcy explained as she stared out of the doors into the street.
"It's been a bit hectic in London. Everywhere up here is booked up."
The receptionist nodded, unconvinced.
"Any luggage, madam?"
"No, my husband has our cases and will be joining us shortly."
Marcy smiled an unconcerned smile as she signed the form she was presented with. The receptionist took the completed document with a nod.
"Will you pay by cash or card, madam?"
she asked expectantly.
"Oh, cash, please. I find it much easier than cards,"
Marcy replied. Her thinking was that cash is less traceable, so they should be safe.
"Thank you, madam,"
the receptionist said, taking the cash from Marcy before tapping away on her computer.
"Your room number is 247. You will find it on the second floor. The lifts are just to the side,"
she pointed.
"Or you can take the stairs behind you."
She pulled the plastic key from the machine, then passed it over the counter. With that, Marcy took the key, then Hope's hand. They made their way to the lift, with Marcy checking the street outside again for any movement to show that they had been followed. Satisfied, she smiled at the receptionist before adding,
"Just checking for my husband. I thought he'd be here by now. Clearly lost in some sort of sightseeing."
She added a little laugh as the girl glanced towards the door, smiling her acknowledgement of the conversation. Once in their room, Marcy rushed to the window to look out. Checking the road, she saw no unusual movement of any of the men who had lifted her husband into the back of the van. Marcy sat on the edge of the bed beside her daughter, putting her arm around her shoulders. Hope was shaking with shock.
"It's okay, sweetheart, it'll all be fine."
She rubbed Hope's arms and pulled her head into her neck.
"What happened?"
Hope asked.
"I think your dad used his gifts to save us. It's the only explanation."
"But why isn't he with us? Surely he'd be able to escape them. It doesn't make sense that they were able to take him."
Marcy smiled as she thought for a second. It was strange he hadn't been able to leave with them. He was immune to his own gifts, so there was no logical explanation why he hadn't been able to come.
"I don't know, love. I only know if he could have got away, then he would be here now."
She got up and went back to the window. Marcy watched the streets below their window, wondering what could keep Seth from them. In all her years, she had never seen him as angry as he was today. She recalled seeing the group led by the madman circling them, with Seth in the centre, telling them to leave his family alone.
"The last thing I remember was a feeling of being pushed backwards, then the light and the noise of an explosion,"
Hope said. Marcy smiled again.
"That was your dad, always thinking of us first."
She didn't take her eyes from the window.
"He took care of those people, though, after he knew we were safe."
Hope got up to join her mother, watching out the window.
"He will be okay, won't he?"
Marcy smiled.
"He is a survivor. Believe me, he would do anything to get back to us."
She wrapped her arm around her daughter, pulling her close again. Seth had waited for her, so she would wait for him.
"What are we going to do?"
Hope asked.
"We will wait. Your dad will find a way to get to us."
"Wait, we don't know who has him or where they have taken him to. Surely we need to find where he is. Perhaps..."
Marcy considered their options. Waiting seemed the sensible course of action, but she didn't understand how Seth had been taken so easily.
"We should go back to see what we can find,"
Hope said as she reached for her bag.
"No."
Her reply was louder than she had wanted, but the thought of returning simply didn't seem a good idea. They were likely still searching for them. Marching straight into their arms was not something she planned to do today.
"We can't help your dad if they catch us. We need to think."
Hope moved away from the window. Marcy knew her daughter was right. They had to do something. The idea of sitting in this room wasn't one she was comfortable with. They had run from these types many times, but each escape her husband had been the one to lead them. Now, he wasn't here. She knew it was up to her and Hope to find a way to bring him home.
"It's late,"
Marcy said after a while.
"We can't help him tonight. We should try and rest, then discuss our options in the morning."
Her words were calm and soft, but inside her mind was racing. She knew sleep was out of the question as scenarios ran through her mind like galloping horses. She also knew that time was a commodity they had little of, but her logical mind told her that with night approaching quickly, they would be easier to spot on well-lit streets, with less people going about their day-to-day routines.
"But Mom..."
Hope began to argue.
"But nothing. It's getting late. We're still confused about what has just happened. We need to eat, then get some rest. Tomorrow we can begin planning."
Chapter 5. Hope's Plan. Watching her mother prowl around the hotel room, Hope let her mind wander. She tried to focus as her father had taught her to. Hope was wise for her 15 years. They had spent many years running away from unwanted attention, and she'd had as many homes as she had years under her belt, but she was content with life. She always felt a little excitement when her dad would rush into the house, then start throwing his clothes into a suitcase as they had to leave. The world changed yesterday. Both she and her mother were worried sick about her father. The chaos that followed the explosion, along with the knowledge someone had taken him away, was still settling in her mind. She, like her mother, half expected him to burst through the door, start packing them up, then drag them away somewhere new. It suddenly dawned on her that all her clothes were in the other hotel. However new they may be, she had been in the same joggers and top for far too long, she decided. Light began to creep through the curtains as the sun rose over the city. The room filled with a spotlight of sun, showing the two single beds next to each other, as well as the old dark wardrobe on the far wall. The room wasn't a patch on the one they'd left the day before, but it was clean, and for now it kept them safe. Glancing to her left, she saw her mother's eyes focused on her.
"Did you sleep okay?"
Marcy asked.
"I got a little sleep, but not enough."
She groaned as she stretched her arms above her.
"Have you come up with anything?"
It was a hopeful question.
"The Mara,"
her mother said with a little grimace. Contacting them was something she had never done before, but Hope could appreciate why her mother suggested it. In truth, it was the only answer she could come up with when she asked herself who could help them find him.
"Will they help us?"
Hope asked.
"They will, but you need to be respectful and remember everything your father taught you about them. This is a lot to ask, but I know you can do it."
"Okay, I'll give it a try."
Hope sighed as she swung out of bed. She stepped over to the open curtains, letting the early morning light into the room, before settling down in the small chair beside the window. After several minutes and lots of attempts, she finally found her little place, as her father called it, then began to speak in her mind.
"Mara, are you there?"
She breathed slowly and waited, knowing they could hear her, as they had told her dad answers to questions she had asked. Minutes passed, then an hour, then three, but there was no response. She was undeterred, though. She decided to make an attempt every couple of hours until she had success. They settled in the hotel room to wait. This hotel was chosen ahead of their trip to London as the place they would meet if anything happened. They always had a backup location arranged, should anything happen, which it never did, until now.
"Mara, are you near?"
she asked. It was after lunch, so given she had a full belly, she decided it was time to try again. This time, things felt different. She could hear sounds coming from behind her. At first, she assumed it would be from her mother, who was probably still checking out of the window. But then, there was something else in the sound which did not add up. She called out again.
"Mara, can you hear me? Mara?"
She waited.
"Yes, little mistress. We hear you, though you are very quiet."
Hope gave a little squeal of excitement. She tried to concentrate harder to increase the connection.
"Where is my dad? Have you spoken to him?"
she asked in her mind. The one question she avoided was the one which was the most important, but she hoped the answer to the first questions would provide the answer she wanted to hear.
"He is alive, little mistress, though we cannot speak with him, as he is currently unable to reach out to us."
Hope smiled at the response, resisting the urge to open her eyes to tell her mother what she had just learned.
"He's alive,"
she said in her mind.
"Yes, little mistress, but we are concerned, as he does not seem to know who he is,"
the Mara whispered.
"What do you mean he doesn't know who he is?"
Hope asked. There was a pause as her mind went silent. The answer from them caused her to momentarily lose her attention. Hope refocused to concentrate more so she could hear the response. A moment later, she could hear them again.
"He is under attack, from who we do not yet know, but he is also being beaten by those in league with the attacker. It is the combination of these things which stops him communicating with us or hearing us when we speak."
Hope thought about the situation the Mara had explained. It astonished her that a father could be kept in a state where he could not find his quiet place to speak with the Mara, especially since she had never known anything that could cut the connection he had with them. She had been trying for 12 months to improve her own ability to speak with the spiritual realm, but her father could do it as easy as switching on a light.
"What can we do? Do you know where he is?"
She decided practical questions were required.
We do not know where he is, but we do know he is in the same city as you are,
the Mara replied.
We have been putting his memories into his dreams and unconscious mind, trying to remind him of who he is, but it does not appear to be having any effect.
As Hope considered this information, an idea popped into her mind.
What events have you been showing him, Mara?
She asked.
We have shown his birth, as it is an important moment.
But what difference does that make? He needs to see his life and the passion he has for his family. Have you shown him anything connected to this?
There was another pause. Hope thought she could make out whispers again. She tried harder to listen as she concentrated on the sound of the Mara's whispers.
Your father is a remarkable man, little mistress. It is the memories of battles and heroic deeds he needs right now. We know our master is fighting, but we fear he is losing. We do not know what will happen if his mind breaks.
The concern in their voices was clear to her, but she knew her father. She needed the Mara to follow her instructions.
Mara, he is my dad. I know him and know how he thinks. He loves me and my mum with all his heart. He would do anything to protect us. Nothing would come between him and our safety.
She let the words settle, then took a deep breath, hoping the Mara would understand. The problem was that the Mara were in awe of Seth. They did not recognize the softer emotional side of his persona. Only the strong-willed fighter made sense to them.
Can you help him remember us, Mara? Show him why he waited so many years for the love of his life to return to the Earth, and what that means to him to have me?
Again, there was silence. This time, Hope knew it was because the Mara were discussing what she had said between themselves. It was strange to hear one whispered voice having a conversation with itself, but she knew that was how the Mara communicated. Two entities, but one voice in harmony.
We agree, little mistress. We will visit him next time he is sleeping to show him what you ask.
Mara sounded doubtful, but Hope was grateful that they had taken her opinion on board and consented to help. There was a pause. Hope could hear a busy chatter of whispers behind her, as if the Mara were arguing about something.
In doing as you ask,
they finally said,
we will also show him other things from his life to stir his soul, as we believe he needs strength to fight back against this energy. We will also show him events he needs to discover to give him an understanding of what happened, so he can better equip himself to escape that which has entrapped in pain, that which is keeping us from him.
There was a distinct tinge of anger in their voices. Hope felt a chill down her spine as the energy increased around her.
We have been in service to your father for many centuries. We are displeased someone has taken him away from us.
She felt the air move around her and presumed the Mara had begun to circle her. She became increasingly uncomfortable at their behavior, especially since she couldn't see them.
Not since he lost his love all those years ago have we been disconnected and not spoken to him.
They continued as the room became oppressive, the anger of his loss emanating from their energies. Hope cowed at their intensity.
We understood his distance then, as he had suffered a grave loss and he did not want to hear of a future without his love. But this time someone is stopping his spirit reaching out. And in doing this, they have blocked us touching his mind. But they cannot stop his dreams, and it is there he will rediscover himself. So,
Hope became aware of shapes in a peripheral vision moving around when suddenly they were in front of her.
We will discover who this person is who has attacked us in this way. Then Seth, the Mighty, will bring down his fury and we will feast on their souls.
Hope saw two entities appear before her. They were hooded, but she knew who they were. She felt the passion of their words recoiling at their ire. The Mara became suddenly agitated.
Our master sleeps. We must go to him.
With that, they were gone. Hope opened her eyes, blinking several times to accustom them to the light in the room. finding her mother sitting next to her with a worried expression on her face. She gave her what she hoped was a confident smile, although she felt less than assured with the experience she had just had.
"What have you found out, Hope?"
she asked.
"He's alive, Mum."
Hope felt herself lifting into the air as her mother pulled her into an embrace. They laughed together as they jumped up and down on the floor. Hope began to weep, a mixture of joy and relief. Nothing else mattered now. She knew he was still alive.
"Now we need to find out who took him."
"Did the Mara say anything about them?"
Marcy asked. Hope shook her head.
"They don't know, but they did say he was in London, so he can't be that difficult to find him, right?"
Marcy stared at Hope with a determined gaze.
"We will do what we need to, but I suppose it's best if we try to find him using your gifts. Maybe we can search the city using you as a sort of detector?"
Hope wasn't convinced, but with the news her dad was alive and potentially close by, she would try anything.
"Let's give it a shot,"
she said as she grabbed her bag.
"No time like the present, eh?"
Marcy walked over to the door to open it for them both.
"Let's get going then. We should start back where he was taken, but take care, as they might still be looking for us."
Chapter 6. The Early Years. Seth stood fidgeting from foot to foot by the large stone on the path at the front of his house. He'd been waiting forever, as far as he was concerned. His father had told him to wait in that spot for May to collect him from there. His father hadn't been specific as to what May wanted from him, but Seth was excited nonetheless. He hoped it was something to do with her magic. He had watched her bring a pig back to life during the winter. Ever since then, he'd been pestering her to show him how she did it. Ardith was patient as ever. She had explained to him that not all things you see with your eyes are what they appear. To a 5-year-old, it was a poor explanation. He'd scoffed at that answer, which had earned him a reproachful gaze from May. As he was waiting, he decided to try climbing onto the rock to get a better view and rest his feet. After all, he needed them for the walk he was going on with May, so there was no sense in them being weary before he set off. Clambering onto the rock, he glanced down the path towards the village, where he expected May would appear. He took a deep breath, then let out a silent prayer to Thunor, asking that he speed old May up. Thunor was his favourite god, and although the god of thunder is generally not called upon to hurry people along, Seth didn't think he would mind. His town, Fethan Lee, had grown over the last 5 years, with several new families arriving from the outlying villages to settle in a thriving settlement. Seth's father had been instrumental in the growth and had led people from a small village to one of the most prosperous towns in Mercia. From his vantage point on top of the hill, Seth could see out across the whole village and beyond. The collection of houses at the foot of their hill housed all the people he knew. He could pick out the individual homes of his uncles and 3 of his friends from where he stood. He spotted people milling around, tending to their chores as he watched. He stared out over the rooftops towards the River Dee in the west. He planned to go there someday to fish with his father, but it seemed every spare moment his father had was spent with the townsfolk, tending their livestock or fighting raiders from the north or the Celts from across the river. Seth's father was currently off fighting with his uncles, Felix and Raiden. Æthelbald, the king of Mercia, had sent messengers to ask all warriors to join him to help defend the valley against the attacks from the Northumbrian raiders. Seth allowed his eyes to wander as he sat down on the rock. Let his gaze rest upon the old oak tree, which stood like a sentry, watching silently over their crops and livestock at the side of the fields. He hadn't looked at the tree properly before, but now he had time on his hands. He watched the branches gently moving in the warm summer breeze. The huge tree was filled with leaves, which would block out the sun as it passed over the horizon in late afternoon. The branches reached out in perfect symmetry as it had grown unobstructed by any other trees, allowing it to stretch itself from all directions. Its trunk was so massive it took Seth several moments to move around it. He'd counted over 30 steps once and was sure it continued to grow wider each day. The air movement gave no lasting relief from the heat of the morning, but it moved your hair and provided a quick chill to your cheeks. He continued to watch as the breeze took the branches of the tree, then moved them side to side, fluttering the leaves as it passed through. The sight hypnotized Seth, so much so he jumped when May laid her hands on his shoulders.
"Daydreaming, my boy. What do you see?"
May's voice was gentle, but demanding. He knew he should answer, but his tongue caught in his mouth, resulting in a shrug of his shoulders. May smiled as she walked past him. Her kindly eyes sparkled as she passed. Seth grinned at the sight of the woman. She'd always seemed so welcoming and cuddly, with her plump figure providing a warm, cushioned embrace when she had soothed him in the previous summer. Seth always liked it when she smiled, and all the lines on her face seemed to smile simultaneously with her mouth. She gently tugged at his tunic for him to follow. Seth watched as her grey hair, in its customary plait down her back, swayed side to side as the short woman strode away from him. Seth jumped down from his perch, then made after the old woman, who had put a few paces distance between them in the moment since she moved past. Seth jogged briefly to close the gap, then fell in step beside May as they walked past his house, where he could see his mother watching protectively from the doorway. They headed down the hill towards the woods. Seth had been in the woods many times with his father, playing warriors with sticks instead of spears or swords, during which he learned to protect himself always after his father had patted his stick onto Seth's head when he wasn't paying attention. It was important for him to learn to carry both a spear and sword because his father had high hopes for him to become a great warrior like him, to one day take over his position as the head of the town. Seth's head was filled with play fights and moves he'd learned, as well as thoughts of his father fighting far away. So when May stopped, he kept on walking, absent-mindedly making his way to the place he and his father used to play.
"You going somewhere, Seth?"
May called over to him as he reached the first line of trees. He stopped short, suddenly realizing he was walking alone.
"Come, sit beside me so we can talk a little."
Seth broke into another little jog to get to where May was sitting, waiting for him. She patted the grass next to her, indicating that's where he should sit, then waited for him to settle himself.
"Have you heard of Spey?"
Seth's eyes widened. He'd heard of Spey. His eagerness spilled out an enthusiastic nod along with a giggle. This was May's magic. "She will tell me how to heal pigs and make crops grow," he thought.
"Then tell me what Spey is, since you are clearly eager to speak what you think you know."
Seth's grin faded a little. He thought carefully about his answer, but being five, he knew everything, so was confident.
"It's magic, Mother May. You pray a little, I suppose. Then you can make things happen, like making pigs better when they're sick, or making pretty flowers grow in the fields."
He gave a little nod, which showed he'd explained fully, then sat waiting for May to congratulate him. There was a little laugh on the lips of May as she spoke.
"And that's it? Magic to heal pigs and make flowers grow? Well, this is certainly an answer I've not heard before. I'll give you that, my boy."
It interested May. She smiled at the satisfied look he had on his face.
"I suppose you're right, in a way, Seth,"
she said as she ruffled his hair.
"But it is so much more than just that. There are many things Spey can do, many more uses for which it can be put towards."
May paused again as she looked at Seth. He nodded to show he was still paying attention.
"Have you heard of Frigg?"
Seth looked indignant. Of course he had heard of Frigg. All boys his age knew of her. He nodded.
"Of course you have. Well, when Frigg wandered the earth, it was merely a barren land where nothing grew and no animals grazed. It felt to her that the world was filled with loneliness as she made her way across it. It so saddened her that she decided to leave behind something so that the world was no longer alone. As she walked the earth for the last time, she left her own essence, or energy if you like, so the world might know company."
She had told the tale many times. Each time she enjoyed the expressions on children's faces as she recited the story of Spey and how it became known to the world. Seth jumped up and down in glee. He was so excited she had to put a hand on his shoulder to settle him.
Well,
May continued,
the world was thankful, for it knew the gift it had been given. Over time, it nurtured the energy, so it felt welcomed and wanted in its new home. Soon the energy felt a kinship to the world, so it started to settle into the land.
May?
Seth interrupted.
Yes?
May inquired.
Why did Frigg leave?
This was a question he had always thought of when hearing the story.
Because she was needed at Woden's table. Can I continue?
Satisfied, Seth nodded.
For a long time, the world only knew its bleak, lifeless existence, but now had the consciousness of Frigg within it, so it decided something was needed to break up the barrenness of the land, so asked the energy for help. In that moment, water sprung from the ground, creating vast seas and lakes. Time continued with the water lapping against the land for many eons until the world asked the energy to bring forth life. Once again, the energy obliged. This time it decided to become plants, then creatures of the land and sea until one day it decided to become us.
Seth stared blankly at May for a moment, then he raised a single eyebrow.
So we are Frigg's energy, which lives on the land,
Seth mused. May nodded and gave him a warm, congratulatory smile.
Spey is the word we use for the energy, so a spey worker uses their abilities to work with the energy around us. Because the energy is everywhere and within everything, it can be asked to heal and grow new life. But not everyone can work with spey,
she added.
It has to be taught first, so a person knows how to ask for things to be done and learn to respect the force of the energy around us.
May cut the question on Seth's lips short. He sat back, a little deflated.
Only a few of us, like you, can learn how to use spey.
Seth watched as May drifted off for a second in thought.
Less and less people are born with the skill as the years go by,
she continued after a moment.
Anyway, it is Frigg's will which allows us to use her energy for our own ends. Without her grace, we would not be here speaking now. So you understand that attempting to use spey without knowing how to do so correctly would upset her. And we wouldn't want to do that now, would we?
Seth didn't need to think about the answer. His head shook almost involuntarily.
I intend to teach you how to work with spey, Seth. I want you to learn the lessons I did when I was your age. And for the next few years, I will show you all I know about the energy and how it works. I will show you the things that live within it, those things you can see and those you cannot. I want you to become one with Frigg's essence, so you can fulfill the potential I saw in you when you were first born and still see in you now.
Seth's smile returned and he nodded eagerly.
Lessons will start tomorrow, Seth, not today. Today is for you to think about what I have told you. Tomorrow, I want you to explain to me what spey is, so I can see if you have gained the knowledge you need to begin. Do you understand?
Seth felt a little disappointed, but he nodded, showing he understood what was being asked of him. May dragged herself to her feet. Seth jumped up beside her.
Well, Seth, I suppose it's time we headed back to your house, where I'm sure your lovely mother will have something hot waiting for us to drink and maybe a little something to eat as well.
She gave Seth a wink, then turned towards the hill. She began to walk purposefully towards Seth's house. Seth paused a moment, trying to commit to memory what he had been told, then ran after May. Together, they made for his house and some breakfast.